Welcome back to Passive Income Pilots, everyone. Tate Duryea and Ryan here doing a solo episode. How you doing, Ryan?
Good. We're solo flight today.
That's right. Well, you know, two pilots always have to be in the cockpit, though.
That's true. But it's like we're taking everything we learned from our instructors and we're applying it to a solo flight, which is exactly what we're doing today. Because we have over 111 episodes now of Passive Income Pilots. And the word has spread like wildfire that we're the number one pilot podcast for investing in the world. No one else is
true
any bigger and better. And that's thanks to our listeners. So if you're just tuning in, what we're going to do is we're going to basically give you the cliff notes of over 110 hours of finance and investing education that we discussed. So we're literally going to shortcut it. So if you're like just found this podcast, this is a great episode to start. Actually, if you're listening to this podcast, we'll refer back to this one as like a, hey, here's everything we've talked about. And then you have the benefit of like all the questions we get in our inbox, all the after hour conversations, happy hours Absolutely. We've had with pilots. And we're like, hey, here's all the things that pilots really care about and really wanted to hear about. That's what's in this episode. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Funny enough, I'm actually in Las Vegas speaking at a pilot retirement event today. That's why I'm in a suit. And we talked about a bunch of this stuff. I just talked about a bunch of these topics on stage. And so we're going to point back through these episodes. So when we're talking about these strategies, we're going to be referencing episode numbers. So this is a great one to take a note on your phone. If there's a topic that you want to do a deeper dive into, make a note of that episode number so you can go back and check it out.
Yeah. So I think we're going to break these down into five main categories. And so if you're following along or you want to take notes, here are the five. Tate, you want to take us through the five categories that we're going to talk about today?
Yeah. So the first is going to be five ways to find cash to invest. And that also is going to be the topic of investing smart. You know, we say all the time, you know, if you're going to put $50,000 into a limited partner position in a syndication deal, don't make it your last $50,000.
Yeah.
That is not the way to invest in real estate and alternatives. You want to have the foundation poured. So we're going to talk about ways to find cash to invest. And that really has to do with laying the foundation of what to do with your cash before you go out and invest. Next, we're going to be talking about life insurance. We're going to be talking about the short-term rental loophole, IRAs, bonus depreciation, and cost segregation. And I don't know if this is even five anymore, but we're going to hit rep status, real estate professional status, and syndications at the end.
And then the number one question I always get is, who should be my CPA? Right? We're going to answer that. And, you know, I have lots of follow-up questions when somebody asks me that. They're like, hey, do I need to call Hull CPAs to do my tax return? And we're going to answer that question. Like, hey, when does it make sense to use a firm like that? And when does it make sense to do TurboTax?
So with that, let's get into it.
Welcome to Passive Income Pilots, where pilots upgrade their money. This is the definitive source for personal finance and investment tactics for aviators. We interview world-renowned experts and share these lessons with the flying community. So if you're ready for practical knowledge and insights, let's roll.
All right, Ryan. So five ways to find cash to invest, and then we'll go on little tangents here into each one of these strategies. Let's start with the first one. What do you got?
Yeah. So first and foremost, I like to tell pilots, look, max out your 401k. That's great advice. Make sure you have a healthy reserve account for everything that might come up. And, you know, usually you want 3 to 6 months of safety net of just all your, like, go through with your spouse and calculate, hey, what would happen if I had to stop working? We had to pay all the bills. What is that for 3 to 6 months? And that's what I would have in the bank. So now you're like, okay, now I have this extra cash. So I've made good income this year. I picked up green slips or open time or whatever. I've got all this extra cash in my account and I want to invest it. So how do I be strategic about investing it? Should I just take it and invest it? No, you should go and listen to some of our episodes because there's a lot of different things you can do with that money to take advantage of where it goes when it's other than just taking the raw cash. Yeah. So if you don't have a whole life insurance policy, and again, we're not giving any tax, legal, or investment advice, but if you don't have a whole life policy, you want to think about getting one or consider getting one. And episode, Tate, episode what?
So we have covered whole life in three different episodes with Money Insights. The first one was all the way back on episode 47, where we really cracked open the idea behind it. Episode 70 went a little bit further, and episode 84 went even deeper into the whole life strategy.
And if you go to our website, passiveincomepilots.com, you can see a webinar that Tate and I hosted these guys on, and we went deep into the details. So if you're like a details guy, you want to see this, we go into it. Here's the bottom line. You can get a death benefit for investing in a life insurance policy, and the money that sits in there via whole life can actually earn interest. And then you can actually borrow against that life insurance policy and then go invest it, which is going to give you a higher return than just taking cash and throwing it into something that you're doing, right? So look into this strategy. We're not going to spend an hour going into it. We just wanted to let you know. We know about it. We're talking about it. This is like the infinite banking concept, right? This is the, you know, how to protect yourself, how to give something to your family. And this is, we're not talking about term life insurance, which is what Delta, United, American, or these airlines give you as an automatic benefit, which is a, doesn't pay you anything. It just, you know, when you die, you get that one-time payout and that's it. So this is an additional protection. And you should be thinking about this now as a high income earner. Your lifestyle is going to be upgraded. And so you should be thinking about having more than just what the airline offers you and having a vehicle that you can actually use for strategy and investing. So don't just go and throw that cash into a deal. Think about this first.
This is a complicated strategy. It took me years and years and years to get comfortable with the whole life insurance thing. Once you get it, it's an incredible strategy, but you have to be working with someone who knows how to build these policies. We really enjoy them working with the Money Insights guys. They get it. They're no hype. They're no fluff. Check them out. But check out those episodes, because that is a massive hack of what to do with your cash before you go and invest in. It's a source of principal. In fact, hold that thought for 1 second. So I just did a mortgage application for a new property we're buying. And one of the things that it asks for in assets is life insurance. You know, I mean, that can be a massive asset on your balance sheet. So anyway, go ahead.
Well, and I was going to say, you know, Tate and I have learned all the lessons the hard way, right? Tate went and got a crappy policy, right? And then we've gone through, you know, so many people have reached out to us to come onto the show and talk about this. And we narrowed it down to like a vendor that we really love, like a partner that we really enjoy working with, which is the Money Insights guys. So we've done all the work. We've done all the homework. We're shortcutting you to the right people. They're going to go out and find you the best policy. So that is a fantastic way to do it. The next thing, you can put your money in the market and you can invest in the market. With that account, you can borrow against it and leave your money in the market and have a leveraged portfolio, and you can go use that money to invest. Now, there are some stipulations and warnings and cautionary things here, but now you're putting your money in two places. You're getting the benefit of the market and you're also getting the benefit of leveraging against that portfolio account to go make investments. Now, don't overextend yourself. Don't, you know, this, like I said, this is after you've got that cash reserve. It's after you've maxed out your 401k and all these other things, right? We made it an entire episode on that. Tate, do you know what episode number that was?
Yeah, this was in our ways to find cash to invest episode, in episode 71. And what Ryan's talking about there is an S block, a securities backed line of credit. So instead of taking a, let's say everybody's familiar with that HELOC on your house, you go out and you take a line of credit on the equity that's built up. You can do the exact same thing on a stock portfolio, but it has to be outside your 401k. So we're talking about a taxable account, not your tax advantaged 401k, but just an additional stock account that's outside of your 401k.
Now, while your cash is sitting in your bank account, you're probably wondering, like, what's the best interest rate? What account has the best? Should I do a CD? Should I do savings? Should I do checking? Should it be Chase? Should it be my hometown bank? Should it be Boeing Credit Union, or, you know, something like that? Like, Tate, can you, we had a great episode with a guest that talked about the ticker that.
Yeah, this was Cash Strategies with Brian Harriet. And he talked about what to do with your idle cash. Now, I prefer to shove it into a life insurance policy. But if you have idle cash and it's just sitting there and you want to put it in something, we have two money market tickers, and it's Victor Mike Fox X-Ray X-Ray. That's the Vanguard Federal Money Market Fund. We also have FDRXX, that's Fidelity Government Cash Reserves. And there's two treasury bill ETFs that were mentioned on that show, and that's SGOV, Sierra Golf, Oscar, Victor, and Bill, Bravo India Lima. That's the SPDR Bloomberg 1 to 3 month T-bill ETF. So there are some easy places that you can just park cash while it's sitting there. Instead of it being in your checking account, accumulating 0% interest, you can sweep it over to a brokerage account, do something with it.
Next thing, 401k loan. Everybody thinks, okay, don't take a 401k loan to go buy a flat screen or a boat or a 185, right? Go, well, I guess you probably can't buy a 185 for 50 grand, but you can go take a loan up to $50,000 or 50% of your 401k, whatever is lower, right? And you can use that to invest. Now, what you might think, why would I want to borrow against my 401k to go make an investment? That sounds silly, and I'm probably going to have to pay penalties and all that. Nope, you're not. And in fact, this is a way to put more money in your 401k, because if you've already maxed out your contribution, guess what? Now you can put more money in because you're paying interest to yourself. So here's some disclaimers and warnings on this, which is you're going to pay the prime rate, which I believe is 8%-ish. You'll have to check.
Something like that.
Yeah. So you're going to have to pay 8% to yourself. So if you've already maxed out your 401k for the year and you take a 401k loan to get cash to then invest in something like a syndication or real estate, guess what? You're going to be paying 8% to yourself. And it goes right back into your 401k, regardless of how much you've contributed. And one thing to worry about is make sure that you know that it's going out of the market and you're going to have to pay that loan off over 5 years and comes out of your payroll. So make sure you have the cash flow and you anticipate that money not being in your paycheck.
Absolutely. We talked about this on episode 23. Two important distinctions here. One, unlike the loan against the life insurance policy and the loan against securities, the stock portfolio, where you are taking a line of credit, but you're not dissolving the assets. You're not having to sell those securities, convert them to cash, and then take the cash out of the account. In those cases, it's a true loan against the equity. In this case, in a 401k loan, you are actually liquidating the assets. So don't go get a 401k loan on a day that the market's down 15%. Yeah. Wait until you see that, you know, you're comfortable with the fact that that cash is not going to be on temperature, so to speak. You are taking it out of the market, lose out on the growth. But, you know, do your own homework and figure out if and when it makes sense for you. But it's a great way to get a hold of $50,000 very quickly.
Yeah. The other thing that I want to talk about is inside of this where do you get cash? What airline did you fly for and what did you do with that 401k? Is it collecting dust and did you not do anything with it? You can convert that into a self-directed IRA. Now, we have gone deep on this topic, but I love episode 110 with Ramaz.
We recorded this episode last week. It's literally the next one down.
Yep, the next one down. So if you're like, how do I take my old 401k and turn it into an SD IRA? Why would I even want to do that? Well, you'd want to do that because Delta, American, United, Hawaiian, whoever you're flying for, they're putting all the money in your 401k. You're maxing that thing out. You're going to have a huge 401k. And you're like, you know, I really want to buy some real estate and I don't want to do it. I don't want to put, you know, more and more money into the stock market. So you want to diversify. If you've decided to do that, then you want to go potentially take your old 401k, do a rollover, put it into an SDIRA, and now you can actually direct it how you want and you can invest in real estate. You can buy a rental property. You can invest in a syndication. You can do all these things. So any former employer, so if you worked at Masaba, Pinnacle, Colgan, you know, you name it, Horizon Air, SkyWest, and now you're at your major, you can go back and you can take that 401k, convert it into an SDIRA, and we have a whole episode on that in the previous one.
Yeah, if you want to go into the technical details, if you go all the way back to episode 36, we interviewed Derek Long from Quest Trust. Keep in mind that Quest Trust does not exist anymore. They were acquired by Inspira. And from our investors who were forced to migrate over to Inspira, we have heard that they're not very inspiring. So
yeah,
just that disclaimer, that company doesn't exist anymore.
Does not inspire.
They do not. We have not heard good feedback and they've been a pain to work with. But it's still a great episode, great content. And I think Derek Long does a very good job of going deeper into the technical details if you're somebody that really wants to pop the hood.
You know, here's another thing, Tate, that I love. An episode we did a long ways back. But you know, you're sitting on this cash and maybe you're getting into a conversation with your spouse and somebody says, we should pay down our mortgage
Oh boy.
With this cash.
Yep.
Remember that conversation we had, right? We covered that. Why maybe that might not be a great idea. So if you want to jump back to episode, Tate, do you know?
That is episode number 11, How to Succeed in This High Interest Rate Environment. We recorded that all the way back 2 years ago, April of 2023.
Yeah. So if you're like, should I pay down my house? Should I invest in this piece of real estate? What should I do with this money? Please listen to that episode before deciding. Now, again,
kills,
we're not giving
it. Kills me. When I fly with somebody that says, I'm almost done paying off my house. I'm like, what's your interest rate? 3.5%.
Oh my gosh.
Why?
Yeah.
So
why?
Go back. We want to understand interest arbitrage. You want to understand your inflation adjusted interest rate. These are important concepts to be familiar with so that you can intelligently manage your money.
That's right. The other thing that I want to say is HELOC, right? So HELOC, home equity line of credit. If you have paid down your house and you're like, oh, why did I do that? You know, go get a HELOC. It doesn't cost you really, but an appraisal costs maybe $500 or something like that. Don't quote me on that. But yeah, Third Federal Bank in Cleveland, Ohio always has the best rate. It's like 6% right now, or maybe 7%. They have great terms. They're always like subprime. They're always like lower than prime on the mortgage.
But what if somebody doesn't live in Ohio?
It's nationwide. Yeah. Nationwide lending. Pretty cool. So I've taken out a HELOC through Third Federal. They're not sponsoring or anything. I've got nothing to gain here. I just noticed that their HELOC is always the lowest rate. Typically, there might be a new entrant to the market. And you have that HELOC, you don't have to use it. But man, it's nice to have that checkbook and have 150 to 200 grand just sitting there on a line, and maybe you use that instead of your cash and just leave your cash in the bank. I don't know. It just depends on, again, how to thrive in the high interest rate environment. Episode will walk you through the thought process and what you should do and what you shouldn't do, or things you should think about, right? And that's it.
I'm going to touch one more thing on that HELOC. You know, we refer to this in the investment world as lazy equity in the real estate world, right? Because if you have, you know, okay, your house, right? You paid down your house. Your HELOC is a wonderful way to pull some cash out to invest. Let's say you have a rental property. Let's say you bought it for $1 million and you put 20% down. So you have $200,000 cash into the deal, and you've slowly chunked down, paid down that loan to where maybe you only owe $500,000 on it, and the property has appreciated to 1.5. You have $1 million worth of equity sitting there. And when you look at the future appreciation of the property plus the cash flow, you might be thinking, well, on $200,000 basis, that's pretty good. But yeah, what about on $1 million basis? If you were to sell, you would take home $1 million. Like you have $1 million of equity, right? You might find, if you do that math, ROE, return on equity, that it's paltry, that you're sub 2-3%. And it may make a whole lot of sense to re-leverage that, take that equity and put it to work somewhere else. You don't have to sell the property, take a line of credit. So anyway, I love keeping an eye on that ROE metric.
I love it too. And you know, one thing just to be mindful of is check to make sure the HELOC, if you move out of that house and you have it as a rental property, the HELOC companies tend to notice the change of address. So just know that they could freeze your line if you no longer occupy that house, if that is the terms of the HELOC. So just a little disclaimer, ask me how I know. I learned the hard way. so it's like they noticed my address changed and all of a sudden my HELOC was gone. So you have to owner occupy typically, or make sure the lender is okay with doing a HELOC on a non-owner occupied residence. Tate, we're going to transition. That's ways to go find cash, shore up cash, what to do with your cash before you put it into an investment to make it more valuable, right? Tons of resources and episodes there. Let's shift gears to the short-term rental loophole. This is number two, right? We're 2 of 5.
I was just talking to a group of pilots about this after my talk. It's really the most powerful loophole in the IRS tax code right now. And, you know, I was just talking to this pilot. He's a few years away from retirement. He said he's given $200,000 a year to the IRS, just at the federal level. And he's talking to a CPA going, what can I do? What can I do? He said he had 7 kids. His wife owns a business. And he's asking the CPA about what about if I buy a rental property, a vacation property? And his CPA said, nope, can't do anything with that. I'm like, are you crazy? So we're not telling you should go work with Anderson Advisors or Toby Matt, or Hall CPA or any of these guys, because they legitimately may be too much horsepower for your particular situation. And we will talk about that soon. But if your CPA tells you that there are no write-offs available to you, they are not doing their homework sufficiently. The short-term rental loophole is one of my favorite things in the world. We've talked about it back on episode 44. And we actually, in that episode, we break down what we were doing with a short-term rental back in 2023 while we were going through it. Essentially, if you take a property, you buy it, you spend at least 100 hours managing it throughout that calendar year, you place it into service in that calendar year, and the average length of stay is less than 7 days or less, you can take the depreciation losses from that asset against your W-2 income. Now, this goes back to the passive activity rules of 1986. For 1986, pilots, physicians, whatever high W-2 income earners were able to buy real estate, use the depreciation losses against their W-2, and there were a bunch of physicians back then paying no income tax. So the IRS caught on and said, okay, no more of this. They brought in the passive activity rules. What the passive activity rules are is it says rental real estate is now grouped in to everything else that's passive. So if you invested passively in a business, you're not actively involved, they grouped real estate in with that. They said, we don't care how much time you spend managing your properties. If it's rental real estate, passive, the losses are passive and it can't go to offset active income.
Now, that's right.
A number of years later, people fought back against it and said, hey, what if I am active and this is my main hustle? And that's when we got real estate professional status. We can touch on that as well. But real estate professional status is a totally different animal. That's a difficult animal to ride. But the short-term rental loophole is not bad. Please.
Yes. So you're talking about tax code depreciation. People are probably like, what is going on? Right. That's what the episode's for. Go nerd out on the episode.
Right.
Here's the bottom line, guys. You go buy $1 million. Let's do $100,000. You go buy $100,000 short-term rental. You put it on Airbnb and you actively manage it, right? We'll get into the details and hours or whatever. You can get a $30,000 tax write-off, call it
ish.
Average, right? Ish, maybe 20, maybe 50. What just depends on your cost seg. We'll get into that. You can get a $20,000 to $50,000 write-off in your first year, and you can write off your income at your airline, right? And you can't do that unless you do this loophole. And that loophole is short-term rental, right? So there's a whole episode on it. Tate has basically given a masterclass on that over the last 2 years of this show. And guess what? If you're like, I don't believe these guys, they're going to get audited, blah, 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 blah. We've had probably a half a dozen pilots find this podcast, go out, buy a short-term rental loophole, and then write us and tell us, hey, I saved $40,000 of my taxes this year, right?
Somebody save $100,000.
Yeah, we had somebody save $100,000 on their taxes, right? So, you know, it's all about the activity that you have against things. And so that's what the episode dives into. We just want to let you know, if you're and your wife or you're and your spouse are like, hey, I'm thinking about buying a short-term rental because I think it'd be fun to manage it and whatever, or you know, we just really want to have a vacation home someday on the shore. Guess what? We have a whole episode on that as well. We want to have a whole, you know, we want to buy a vacation rental and we want to kind of figure that out. Guess what? You can do that. You can put it on Airbnb, take a huge tax break from your airline W-2 income, let it do its thing as an Airbnb for years. And then when you're done with it, it could be your retirement home, right? So yeah.
An amazing loophole. It's honestly, it's one of the best things going for high income W-2 earners. If you don't have something else, you know, I love this, what Mark J. Kohler said on episode 82. And he goes, listen, guys, if you don't have real estate, if you don't have a side hustle, a business, something, he goes, I got nothing for you. I can't do anything for you. There's no tax breaks. So you got to change your facts to change your tax, right? You have to start doing something for your CPA to then, you know, work through some of these tax strategies with you. If you have nothing, there's nothing to go off of.
And this is a good segment into rep status. And I'll just start number 3, rep status. This is what we talk about. on the show quite a bit. So I had a pilot come to me and say, hey, I've done two of your syndications, Ryan, and I'm making a lot of money this year and I'm trying to save taxes. I listened to episode number 75 and Hall CPA came on, the real estate CPA. And, you know, we really encourage people to check them out. But should I call him? And I was like, yeah, sure, why not? Well, then he came back to me and he goes, hey, I called Hall and they turned me down. And I was like, oh, and I go, well, tell me what happened. Well, they said that I don't really have anything in my portfolio that justifies using their service because they're more of a strategist and they're going to charge you, you know, thousands of dollars to do your tax return. And they just were honest with me and they said, hey, listen, you've got two syndications that really are just going to give you suspended losses and you're not doing a lot of activity other than your W-2 job. Don't do this. So I've had a lot of great conversations with pilots who come to me and say, hey, I've got a farm, I've got a house, I got I've got a multifamily, I've got 10 syndications with you. Should I have a CPA that is worthy of kind of going through these types of things? And the answer is yes, definitely. Because you should get a strategy going because you have a lot of activity. So when Tate says change your facts, right? That's what we mean. Like if you're just an airline pilot, you know, that's great. Showing up to work, put money in your 401k and coming home. Like you don't need a fancy CPA. There is no magic. I hate to say it. There's no magic. There is no special guy who can pull a rabbit out of the hat for the tax code. And if you find that person, please let us know. But we've talked to dozens of tax attorneys, CPAs on the show, and literally there's nothing you can do. Now, there is one thing you can do called get rep status. And so this is when you become a real estate professional. Rewind all the way to episode 14 with Toby Mathis, one of our...
Episode 75, we did a deep dive on rep status with Brandon Hall as well. But yes, episodes 10 and 14 with Toby Mathis, unbelievable.
Unbelievable. So if you're like, hey, I want to get into all this tax stuff, what I can write off, what I can't write off, how do I position myself? Those two episodes, 10 and 14, I think are our highest downloaded episodes out of the 110 that we've done. And think about it. We did those episodes in the beginning when our listenership was very low, but they're still our most downloaded episodes. So literally that one hit the bell for listenership. So go back to those episodes. Rep status basically is this, guys, without getting into all the requirements and the details, you got to go out and do real estate activity actively, right? You got to go out and legitimately be a real estate professional. You got to sell real estate. You got to buy real estate. You got to operate real estate. You got to do stuff like that. You do it enough, then the IRS says, hey, you're a real estate professional. And so you put that on your tax return, and then you can take all these deductions that you get from syndications and real estate activity and depreciation, and you can write it off against your Delta income, your United income. So that's what rep status does, is it allows you to take your passive real estate income, because you're active now as an active trader business, and it allows you to deduct it against your high income earning activity as a airline pilot. So
precisely. Remember when I was talking about the passive activity rules of 1986? This is the rule that came in years later when people were saying, hey, this actually is my trader business, WTF. I want this should be legitimate. And so they said, okay, fine. If you do more activity in real estate than you do in any other trader business.
And here's the big secret.
More than 750 hours.
Exactly. And here's the big secret, right? Airline pilots are the perfect case study for this because we can only work 1,000 hours a year. So that allows us to justify potentially, if we have the right activity logbooks and things like that, to say, hey, we worked more than 1,000 hours or whatever the requirement is, 750 hours a year in this real estate business. So now it's like, okay, cool. You can be a rep status. I was an active real estate rep status as an airline pilot, as I built my portfolio of self-storage. And Tate is rep status because he's married to a real estate agent. So let me repeat that. You don't have to do it as the pilot. So if you have a spouse who's like, you know, I really want to work an extra side hustle, maybe you ought to consider them being a real estate professional, like selling real estate or doing something that qualifies as real estate professional status. Because
or
now
just
that
managing,
you
would, yeah, yeah, or just managing your own rental portfolio, that counts too. They don't have to sell real estate. And that's the common misconception. Everybody says, oh, well, you have to have your real estate license. Nope. If you have a portfolio of a half a dozen rentals and they spend 750 hours a year managing them, that counts.
Yeah, and you do one or two syndications, just $100,000 in a syndication or something like that, you're going to get a $20,000 to $40,000 tax break in the first year. That all goes against your W-2 income now. That's like worth half of what, you know, like depending on your state and everything, that could be like a 40% rebate, basically, just because your spouse works in real estate professional or you've changed your career. So something to think
spouse
about.
Spouse getting the real estate professional is the best. That's the easiest. But in episode 108, you go back, we actually aired a YouTube presentation from Brandon Hall going through a case study of an IRS tax audit that held up in court where a tugboat captain, harbor pilot, won his case that he had rep status. And so check that out if you're interested in qualifying solo, just as yourself, your individual, without the spouse. Check that one out.
Yeah, that's great. All right, so I think we've gotten through three. So, right?
Next is bonus depreciation and cost segregation. So this is the fuel that goes into the engine of all the strategies that we're talking about. We say that you can take depreciation losses against your W-2, or you can, you know, even if you can't take it against your W-2, it sits over in the passive side and it carries forward in suspended losses. All these tax benefits revolve around this cost segregation study, and then bonus depreciation really revs it up even more. So let's talk about cost segregations first, Ryan.
It's simply put, when you buy real estate that you're renting out actively, not that you're flipping or rehabbing or whatever, it's got to be entered into service, meaning that you just have to be actively holding out to the public and renting units. You get a cost seg study, which is just a study of your property where an engineer comes and says, hey, these carpets, drapes, countertops, cabinets, those are all not going to last you 40, 39 plus years. Those are going to only last you 5 years
in residential.
Yep. It's only going to last you 5 years. So you can depreciate these components faster than the building, right? So now you're going to accelerate your tax losses. And then there's some things that go into, so all you have to remember is residential 27 and a half years. That's how long you can straight line depreciate. In commercial real estate, like my self-storages, you go 39 years. And when you break it down and get those things in 15-year life and 5-year life, like building components, utilities, things like that, you can take all that and get accelerated losses in your first year by applying what's called bonus depreciation. And that gives you the losses. So if you invest money in a syndication or real estate, you're going to get a cost seg study typically done, or make sure that you get one and make sure you ask your operator that you are getting one. We do one on everything. So does Tate. So you get those losses in the first year. And so if that investment, for example, is making distributions, passive income, or you're getting distributions from other rental property, that depreciation will shield you from having to pay any taxes on those depreciation on those distributions as they come out.
Let me walk this back for you. If anybody's eyes are crossing,
yeah,
you buy a house as a rental property. The straight line depreciation is 27 and a half years. You can't depreciate the land, right? But the structure, the IRS recognizes that thing is going to break down over time. And they just plucked 27 and a half years out of thin air. And they said, that's the depreciation schedule. So if you straight line depreciate that property, and this is the wonderful thing about real estate, is are you really losing that money? No. But over 27 and a half years, that house goes from being worth, let's say, $1 million worth of structural value to being worth zero. And you got to write off $1 million worth of phantom losses over that course. All a cost segregation study does is it pulls components that realistically aren't going to last nearly 3 decades. And it puts them into their real appropriate buckets. And fun fact, this is actually considered the correct way to depreciate real estate by the IRS. The incorrect way is to put your refrigerator on the same straight line depreciation schedule as the foundation and the studs. That is the incorrect way. And of course, the IRS is fine with it. If you take a smaller tax deduction, they're not going to argue. But they do consider a cost seg, breaking these components out, putting them in these 5, 7, 15-year categories, the correct way. Depreciate real estate.
Totally. All right.
Now let's talk about bonus depreciation because.
As part of number four. Yes.
As part. Because so, yeah. The cost segregation and the accelerated depreciation were already a great benefit. But when you pour on bonus, now you can take anything that's less than 20-year lifespan and bonus it in year one. Under 100% bonus depreciation that we had for 5 years under the Tax Cut and Jobs Act, it is now sunsetting. It's phasing out currently at 40%, but it's worth still talking about because the new tax bill that's going through the House right now has bonus depreciation coming back retroactively as of January 20th of this year. It's yet to be seen how this bill is going to be picked apart, but it is looking like we're getting 100% bonus depreciation back out till 2029. So we are all really excited about that. There's going to be some huge, huge tax savings through that for real estate investors.
We're on pins and needles here waiting for that thing to get signed. By the way, if you're thinking like, well, oh man, I missed out on that. I bought my property back in 2019 and I didn't do any of this. Guess what? You're wrong. You can retroactively go back.
Thank you. So glad you mentioned that.
Yes. That's the big nugget that I had because you're like, oh man, I wish I would have found this show, you know, 5 or 6, 7 years ago. Guess what? It's not too late. You can go back. You can get your cost seg study. You can do your bonus depreciation and you can get a big tax break. And a lot of pilots have written in and said, thank you for telling me that. Thank you for introducing me to Eric Oliver, who's our cost seg guy from Cost Seg Authority. He showed up on our podcast in episode
85.
So go back to 85 if you want a deeper dive on all this cost seg bonus depreciation. We have a link in those show notes of episode 85, where if you want to schedule a free consultation with Eric, costs you no money other than just a couple minutes of your time on a layover. Call him and say, hey, here's my property address. How much do you think this will cost? What do you think I'll save? He'll give you all that stuff for free. And then you can get your cost seg study done.
I literally talked to Eric Oliver yesterday because they're doing an estimate on a property that we have under contract. That's something important as well. Not just looking back, but looking forward before you take something down. Remember, we were talking about that short-term rental loophole. You definitely want to get a cost segregation study done on that property, right? So maybe before you buy it, you should get an estimate done so that you can figure out, okay, what does the tax benefit look like? How outsized is it? Maybe you have something wrong where the land value is super high and your cost seg is going to bomb. You want to know that before you close on, let's say, $1 million, $2 million property. So pro tip.
All right. Now for the grand finale, syndications, right? Everybody, that's what Tate and I do.
We're fist pumping. This on YouTube.
Exactly.
Yeah. Let somebody else do the work for you.
Yeah. You heard all this and you're like, oh my gosh, it just sounds like a lot of work. It is. Real estate is a ton of work, but if you don't want to do any of the work, you want to just do it passively. You've got Tate and I who do syndications, meaning that, look, I've gone out and bought over 5 million square feet of self-storage and I'm in 15 states. I've got $800 million of this stuff, 30,000 plus units. I've got a 150 person company and basically I can take all that knowledge, experience, know-how in the market and you can just invest $50,000 to $100,000 in one of our deals and you get bonus depreciation. You get all that tax efficiency we talked about. You get cash flow potentially depending on the deal, ground up development and all these things, all great returns. And guess what? You can go just pick up green slips and do that and focus on what, you know, makes you a lot of money more efficiently. And you can benefit from the experience of an operator who's in a local market and knows how to find a great deal. Likewise with Tate, what's super fun about Turbine Capital, and I'm with Spartan. So Spartan Investment Group is my company. I'll give Tate props here. If you're like, yeah, self-storage is cool, I'm going to allocate some money to that. And then Tate, by the way, is going to go find me mobile home parks, gas and oil and natural gas plays, multifamily deals. And Tate basically goes out and he looks for the best operators to partner with in different asset classes, giving you more variety of maybe what you want to invest in. So if you're like, hey, how do I get involved? Just email us, you know, ryan@spartan-investors.com.
Tate@turbinecap.com.
Get on our list. Go to our website, spartan-investors.com or turbinecapital.com. Is that what it is?
Turbinecap.com.
Yeah. And you can just join our list and then you're in our ecosystem and you can just get deals that come by. And if you're like, man, how do I evaluate a syndication?
And yeah, we talked all about the pros and cons of syndications on episode 74. We got into the nuts and bolts of why they're great and why they might not be so great for some people. So if you want to hear good, the bad, the ugly, go to episodes 74. As I'm looking at it, it's got kind of a weird title. It says The Inside Track, Mastering Real Estate Syndications for Long-Term Success. It really was just pros versus cons. What are the great things about it? What do we love? What are the not so great things that you should be aware of so that you have correct expectations going in?
Absolutely. And it's a great diversification strategy. So if you're looking for passive stuff, we've had tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars from pilots invested in syndications over the years, and they've really benefited from it. So syndications are a great thing. The big deal is finding an operator you trust. I've invested in over 20 of these things outside of Spartan. And, you know, the big thing is do I find a really good, trustworthy operator that is capable of executing on the deal in good times and in bad? Because really, these investments can go wrong, but what matters is who can fly their way out of it, right? So that's really at the end of the day.
Pilots in the aircraft. Yep.
Yep.
Exactly. You are a passenger in the back of the aircraft.
Yep. Exactly. So I did want to kind of end on the CPA thing. And I know, Tate, you're probably got something you want to end on as well. But, you know, just as we air these episodes, we try to bring on, we've been in this business over a decade. Tate and I have known each other for over 7 years. We are bringing on people who, in our opinion, have been kind of vetted. Now, it doesn't mean you can just blindly go use them, but we try to bring on in vendors who we trust and who have done a good job for our team and our investors and our listeners, right? So Hall CPA has been brought on, and we sort of have a referral program to them. So you get a discount if you use Passive Income Pilots, but they're not for everybody. And they'll tell you that. So again, like when you're looking for a CPA, hey, should I use Hall CPA? Should I use, really, you kind of got to take a step back and say, do I really need a CPA who's going to give me a lot of strategy if I'm just going and flying the line every day and coming home and that's all I'm doing? You can probably go to TurboTax, dial in your W-2 and you're done, right? If you don't have a lot of activity, you don't need an over-the-top CPA. And, you know, but if you're doing a lot of things and you're getting a lot of strategy, it's probably worth booking a call with one of these guys and taking a look at what you're doing to see if strategy is needed.
Going back to that pilot that has the 7 kids and the wife has a business and they're looking at buying a vacation home. Yeah, I think that would make sense. You know, at that income level, at the end of the career, making a lot of money, you're in your absolute highest income years. And, you know, when he was talking, those light bulbs are going off in my mind going, hey, we've got a business, kids that we can put on payroll. There's you want to buy a vacation home, short-term rental strategy.
Yeah.
Having a CPA that knows these things that can help you, help guide you through that process is really critical so that you don't screw it up and blow up what you thought was going to be a great tax benefit. But like you said, you know, if you're just flying the line, you don't have anything going on, you may not even benefit from doing anything other than the standard deduction. So sure,
yeah,
tax is fine. That goes with all of our episodes. You know, vending machines aren't for everyone. You know, yeah, that was a really cool episode. We talked about how to buy a vending machine and run it like a business for passive income. And sure, that might be a great thing to work on with your kids, but I certainly don't want a fleet of vending machines. It's just, that was episode 65. If you want to go back and learn how to buy vending machines with your kids like Ryan did. It was a super fun episode. Yeah. But decide for yourself whether any of these strategies are right for you and what to apply in your own personal life.
Yeah, I want to stress everything we're saying today. Do your own due diligence. Look it up. Research it. This isn't gospel. We're not telling you what to do. We're simply just telling stories and sharing guests that we've worked with and some that we haven't worked with that might be interesting to pick up the phone and call and talk to and learn about what they have to offer. So overall, we're here to help you on your journey, make great connections, and just provide an awesome education platform that is specific to pilots.
You go to Facebook, join the Passive Income Pilots group on Facebook. We actually pinned a real estate professional status ebook from Brandon Hall that he wrote. It's in files. So if you go on desktop, you go to files, it's available there for download. Again, I didn't write it. Ryan didn't write it. It's just been a great resource for me and my financial life. And so we threw it on there. There's some other good resources there on the Facebook group. You can also ask questions. We'll address them on the podcast. So this was great. Lucky number 111. I hope you found some good indexing for future listening. And with that, see you on the next episode.